Thank you, Mary. Hi, everybody. My name is Mary Emma, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hi,
and this is John, my husband, and you're going to hear more from him tonight. We decided we would just half this, and I'm going to share with you my journey into relationships. And, you know, he said he's going to have the rebuttal when that's over. One of the things I wanted that really comes to my mind, I know when I first got here, anytime I saw a workshop on relationships, I always went in there thinking somebody was going to give me the answer or the magic potion for having a good relationship with a guy. But I think today what I want to do is talk about what we can do in this program and the gifts that we've been given in this program to be able to have relationships with everyone. Because, you know, the healing that takes place, the steps that we can take in this program give us a chance to connect not only with someone that we date, but with the people that we've grown up with our families, the people that we work with, all kinds of people. And really, that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit today. I don't think alcoholics have the market cornered on resentment and guilt. And, you know, all of those things that we kind of carry around, the guilt about what I didn't do or what I did to you, or the resentment about what other people did to me. The only thing we do have that's different from people out there is that we have a program, a loving God, and steps that will help us change and help us heal a lot of those hurts that we brought to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, sometimes when I know people ask us to talk because we are blessed. We have a long-term relationship, especially in Alcoholics Anonymous. John and I started dating in 1980, and we actually came out in public here at the Atlanta Roundup. I'll never forget it. It was magical that, you know, we went to the dances. We used to be the kid or the young people who would dance all night and watch everybody else, you know, go to sit on the sides or go to bed early. And, you know, we're the ones now that as soon as the meeting's over Saturday night, boom, we're upstairs, you know, watching television in the bed. So time moves on. And we were married in 1982, and we have been blessed with a wonderful marriage. But you know what? It hasn't come without its bumps. And I think that's the thing that people want to hear. You know, how do you get through the bad times? And how, once you get through the bad times, do things get even better? I wanted to talk just a little bit about me and how it's surprising to me that I have a long-term relationship. Because when I think about where I came from, and this is before I ever drank, I came from a wonderful mother. She was a single mother. She came from a small town in Cochrane, and there was my brother and myself. And when I was in the fourth grade, my mother became very ill, and she was in the hospital for a year. And the reason I share this is I was in five different schools that year, five different homes. Some people were paid to keep my brother and me. And even though we got back into a home, I was in the fifth grade, I realized, since I've come into Alcoholics Anonymous, at that time, I had already put up the walls. I don't think I ever really had a good relationship with my mother after that. Somehow, I knew that it wasn't that she didn't want to be there for me, but she wasn't. But the one entity that I did have, and this is different from Debbie's sharing this morning, and I know Debbie, and I love Debbie, and I know my story is my own. But I, in the fourth grade, I remember one time lying in the bed. I was staying in this house that this lady was keeping my brother and me. And I was feeling very, very alone. And I remember this warmth coming over me and absolutely having my first spiritual experience and knowing that it was God, and God was saying, I love you and I will never leave you. And that sounds... how could that happen? It did, and I've never, ever felt alone. I've never felt as close to other people as I did to God. So one of the things I did bring in here was that really, really strong faith. But you know what? It didn't keep me from making the decisions that I did. It didn't keep me from going down that self-destructive path of an alcoholic. But one of the things I knew was whenever I came out of a blackout, I knew that it had been God that had saved me. So that was a real positive for me, and that is a faith that I've always had. But on the other side of that, I was always very uncomfortable with people. I didn't look like it. You see, I've always been a smiler. I've always looked like I had it together, and it was always a facade. But today what you see is what you get. I am very comfortable with who I've become in this program, and I'm very grateful to you guys for teaching me how to do this thing. I just wanted to share a little bit with you about when I first got here. Like I said, when I was in the fifth grade, we were settled, and I ended up growing up in Cochran, Georgia, and always, you know, joined all the clubs, did everything that looked right on the outside. We went to church every Sunday, and when I did start getting out there, I remember when I was in 11th grade was when I started dating and ended up with a group that was my first group that were drinking, drugging, and I found the things that made me comfortable with other people. And I'm not going to get into my story right now, but I want to tell you that it was drinking and it was drugs that finally gave me the comfort with you that I always needed. I had girlfriends, I had friends that I hung out with, but they never got to hear what was going on in here. I remember when I was in the meetings and in the program for a little while, and I went out to eat with this girlfriend, and her husband sitting in the back, her name was Betty Foster. And some of you may remember her, and she was a dear friend of mine in the program. We were really close. And I remember we were sitting there one night and we were talking. She always would just tell me everything that was going on with her. And then I would just, you know, listen and smile. And I might say something off the cuff. And she'd say, you know what, Mary Emma, it's like you always get ready to talk about yourself. You always get ready to share something that's really deep and important. And then all of a sudden you just shut the door. And I said, Betty, it's not that I shut the door. I don't even know how to open it. And I think a lot of us have come here like that. I never really knew how to connect with other people. And those are the things that I have learned from you guys. I always needed to have it together. I am one who started working very early, and I've always been a woman who felt that I could take care of myself. And even at my worst drinking, I was still working. I always had a job. My mother died when I was in college, which this was mentioned last night. I think that was something that got me more into my illness, was the one person that I did everything for in my life died. And so I moved on, and the decisions that I made were based on self, on the alcoholic self, and they were self-destructive. I ended up going out to California, and that was where I first came into the program. And it sounds like I just jumped into the program. Once again, you don't need to hear my story about getting sober, because I had to do something to get here. And I did it, and I got here. And I will tell you that it took me two tries to get sober. I always thought that alcoholics, because I first started having problems with drinking when I was in high school. When I first started drinking, I started having problems. You know how they used to have these commercials, and the commercials went something like this. If your child is changing playmates, playgrounds, and they're not talking to you anymore, then your child could have a problem. Well, I was exactly that way. In high school, I'd been in all the clubs, and all of a sudden I ended up with this group, and all of my friends changed, and everything I did changed. And you know, this was the 1960s, late 1960s, and my mother didn't know what to do with me. I mean, basically, I spent my senior year grounded, so that was her way of dealing with the decisions I was making. But anyway, I got sober in California, and I could not talk in meetings. I was I was one of those that when they took the booze away, I really couldn't communicate. And you know how once they took that away, also I seemed to always be sitting with my feelings at the tip of my fingers. Do you remember when you first got here, or maybe you are a newcomer? And if you are a newcomer, I'm so glad you're here. And I'm so glad we've got this meeting. I was so grateful to have marathon meetings when I first got to the program, especially at conventions, because you could just sit in the back and you could nod, and you know, and you didn't have to talk to anyone, so you could take everything in. So anyway, I got sober in California, and everyone loved to talk out there. But I just sat there, and I would tell you that my name was Miriam, and I'm an alcoholic. And I ended up being brought back to Atlanta. And I was here about a year, and I ended up running into some old playmates. And we went out together, and it was a year almost to the day that I had gotten sober. I had come back here and started going to meetings, and you guys just didn't do it right. You know, we've talked about people moving in sobriety, and that is the hardest thing, especially if you're a newcomer, especially if it's at the very beginning of your sobriety. And I did move, and it was not good. And I ended up meeting these friends. I said, come over to my house. We were going to have a party. It was somebody's birthday, and I went out to get, now it's been a year, but I'm thinking maybe a little wine. I got one of the gallons of wine. You know how that is? And that lets, and I experienced that night the progression of this illness. It was as if I'd never stopped drinking. I got drunk. I ended up the very next day calling somebody, because one of the things it did for me was I ended up going out. I ended up in a blackout, and I ended up the next morning in my apartment wondering how I'd gotten there. And that had been my life up to that point when I first came in. So I ended up here. I called somebody, and I got into the program, and you know, it was just what I needed, except I still could not let people know who I was. So that was what was going on with that. When I tell you I couldn't really talk to people very well, it's true even today. I'm better. I'm much better today. But at that time, I met a guy in the program, and at about 6 months sober, he started following me around, and by the time I was a year sober, we were married. AA boy meets AA girl in AA campus, and we moved to Florida. And I was still a blushing bride, and he came in and said, "I'm sorry, I made a mistake. It's not you, it's me." Here's a hint about how my first relationships were. He said one night, "It's not you, it's me. I really don't want to be with you anymore. I think I might have made a mistake." I packed up the very next day and came back to Atlanta. Now, somebody's talked about being runners in this program. I've always been a runner. Even in my previous relationships, if I was dating someone and he did something I didn't like, I would leave. And if I thought I did something he wouldn't like, I would leave. You know, how do you work through conflicts? I had no idea. When I told you that my mother, that I got, you know, we ended up in our hometown, my mother ended up, she never dated. She did spend her life raising her two children, and she was wonderful. But, you know, I never saw my mother kiss a man. I never saw her have a relationship or an argument with someone. And I never saw them get, you know, I never saw anyone resolve any kind of conflicts. So that's what I brought here. I knew how to live alone, but I didn't know how to live with somebody else. I knew how to leave, but I didn't know how to stay. And so that's what John got when we first met. And like I said, we started dating in 1980. I was several years sober. We started dating. We dated 2.5 years. And this was magic for me. One of the things I want to say about John, and I'll say this to young people, to anybody that's starting to date. I know this is 2010, but romance still works. It still works, guys. I just want you to know that. You know, he came to see me, and we had our first date, and he brought flowers, and he wooed me, and it was very romantic. And we dated 2.5 years, and then we were married. And then the fun began. And the reason I say that is, like I said, I knew how to leave, I just didn't know how to stay. And it's probably that way for a lot of us. You know, the Big Book talks about how we take, you know, we take someone and we won't let them go, that they become our hostages. And so I had to learn how to just live with him and be okay and think about him. Because I could work. I went back to school. I have a career today. Like many people are, if you stay here, work the steps, you have a chance to get on with your life. And a lot of times we talk about just getting here and getting sober. But for me, what I was always looking for was, you know, the career, the things that the world wanted, said we need. What are the things we need to be successful? And Debbie was wonderful this morning. A lot of the stuff that she talked about, I was, you know, the God thing is the answer. If God is for me, who can be against me? If God is for me, then I need to be his messenger and go out and share with others what's been shared with me. What I wanted to say about the relationship is I remember we were going to our second year of marriage. And by that time in my sobriety, I had gotten my education. I had a career. We had a beautiful house. We were both going to AA, you know, kind of this couple in AA and looking really good. And I remember starting to have these dreams. And the dreams were that I was alone, and that I was alone and I was in Alaska. And what they were running dreams again. And it got really crazy. I don't know about any of you, but we think one thing, that if I have all this stuff or have all of these things going on in my life, then I'm going to be okay. And I was the craziest. On the outside, it looked great, and I was the craziest on the inside. And it was at that time that I really started seeking God. Now, I told you that I have a strong faith, but my faith, God was a protector, but I didn't know about the God who empowers us. I didn't know about the God that would give me the strength to walk through fear, to do the things that scare me the most. And for me, it was staying with this guy. I started, and let me say something right here. John was wonderful. In fact, he didn't even know what was going on. And here I'm having these dreams. I'm thinking I'm going to need to leave. And he couldn't do anything right. And today we both go through those times. If one of the things about today, and we've worked through all of that, I did go in, end up going into therapy. And you know what I found out? That I went into therapy thinking I had problems with my husband. And the problems, well, they were definitely with me, but let me tell you something, because this was an eye-opener for me. My problems had come from the relationship or non-relationship with my mother and my first relationship in my life. And I had to go back and do some amends, some graveside amends to get that healing, because what really was going on with me is I was so filled with guilt that I wasn't worthy of all these things that were being brought into my life. I didn't feel worthy of the things that I had. And it was because of the guilt of the things I had done to my mother. She got the brunt of my drinking and drugging, and then she died, like I said, she died when I was in college. And you know, when I first got here and did my amends, I thought, she's gone, she sees me. And even though I had a sponsor and we talked about it, we kind of had just put that over to the side. And this was about 6.5 years sober. And it is amazing what happened when I did that amend. Because I had done my fourth step, I had done my fifth step, and how a lot of people say, oh, I come out of my fifth step and all of this wonderful stuff has been, you know, just taken off my shoulders. It wasn't that way for me. What I did know was that I finally had a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, we have to go through that process. We come here, we're unworthy, and you finally have this point in your life that you feel like, I belong here, I have my seat here, I've done the things that I need to do to be a member. But the idea that all of these, I was still just carrying all this baggage. And the things that happened were right at the end of her life. She was dying when I was in college and I went home to take care of her. And when she was spiraling in her illness and her, she had cancer. When she was spiraling down physically, I was spiraling down with the drugs. And what happened was I would get home and somebody had to take her to the hospital in the ambulance. And so I had a lot of guilt about the things I had not done for her in the end. And you know what's happened throughout my life is God has brought other people into my life that I can take care of today, that I can repay for the things that were done for my mother, that I couldn't do for my mother. You know, God is good. He sets up these situations, and we have a chance to relive things in our life. And I've seen it over and over and over again. Maybe not with me, but I did see it in my life, but I've seen it in other people's lives too. I wanted to tell you, though, about the thing with John. One of the things that started happening with us, it wasn't just that I was going to leave. You know how we set ourselves up? I started, we're going into our second year of marriage, and I'm starting to bounce checks. We've moved into a brand new house, and I'm gone all the time. I'm doing things that are driving John crazy. And he stands in the kitchen. One of the things about John is, he will just tell you what he thinks, and then he's over it. Okay, this is what I see, this is what I think, get it together, you know, and it's over. Well, he said that. We're standing there, and by the way, I'm getting ready to go at that very moment. I'm leaving some girls to go down to a women's conference down here in Jekyll Island, and or Sea Island or somewhere down there. And so he has this, we're standing in the kitchen, he says, I can't live like this. I'm not going to live like this. I'm like, oh, okay. And, you know, that day he had just gotten like the third or fourth bounced check statement. And so he's telling me he's not going to live like that anymore. So I have to leave the house with that hanging over my head. And so I'm down here at this big spiritual convention, and I called him back, and I said, what did you mean by that? What did you mean you can't live like that? Do you mean you're going to leave? Do you mean you're going to divorce me if I bounce one more check? You know, what does it mean? He said, well, when you come home, we'll talk about it. So, that sounds, but what it really meant, and that really was when I ended up going into therapy and I found all of this other stuff out. But what I'm finding today about relationships, about my relationship with my husband, is that I find that we're both on the same path, and our goal, besides our sobriety and working with other people, is our God consciousness. And you know, today I want to know what God wants me to do in my life. I want to know what I'm supposed to be doing. We had the meditation this morning, and it was wonderful. And I really believe, too, like many people, about getting plugged into God in the morning. Because, you know, if I go too long, it is amazing. This June, I just picked up my 31st, you know, this is my 31st year, and I can still, after a few days, have these self-destructive thoughts. Now, to me, self-destructive thoughts are different from what they were way back then. I mean, they may be like, I'm going to go spend a lot of money or eat a whole bunch of stuff. You know, they're not the self-destructive, like I'm going to go out and not come back for 3 days. It's different kinds of stuff, but it's definitely off the path. And that's why I believe that we have a daily reprieve from this thing. John and I have worked through a lot of our stuff. Today we have a very comfortable relationship. You know what? We keep a lot of humor in our relationship. I love to laugh. He makes me laugh. He's serious. He's a serious guy, but he certainly keeps me on my toes. And I think it kind of goes both ways. I wanted to share one other thing with you about another kind of relationship, that when you get farther in life, because I was always looking at, you know, how people perceived me, and that has certainly changed. You know, I first walked in here, and what do you think about me? And today I I truly can walk in and wonder how other people are doing in my life. How are you doing? How are you doing? And that has been the change over these years. Something that's happened just this year, because we do have some other relationships in our lives that are not boy-girl relationships. I do have one more thing about the boy-girl relationship, and I remember, and somebody may have even told this here, I don't know who said it, but this guy was talking to his sponsor, and he's just gotten sober, hasn't been sober a year, and he's like, I'm going to have to divorce my wife. And his sponsor said, can't do it. Got to wait at least a year before you make any big decisions. And he goes, but I don't love her. And his sponsor says, let's not worry about love. Let's just think about having good manners and treating the other person with respect and dignity. And you know, treat the person you're living with like you would treat someone that you wanted to impress. And you know, that's true, that using manners and kindness still works. It still works today. I appreciate that in my relationship with John. He's a prince. The relationship I wanted to talk about real quickly before he comes up here has to do with some children that were in John's first marriage, and they're all grown now, and he has grandchildren. I've never really talked about this. Actually, when we first dated, they were kind of in California and were not a part of our life. And now, here, 27 years into our marriage down the road, they are in our life. And his children are adults. And so now they're grandchildren, and actually one of his grandsons has two cute children. So I've not been close to them. I have not been close to them at all. His granddaughter started coming to see us a couple of summers ago, and she would come for a week at a time. And the only thing that I knew about these kids was about his son. And I'm not telling you anything that we haven't talked about a lot, but his son, who he did bring to Atlanta to try and help him, and this is over 27 years ago, he tried to help him, and his son today still struggles. He's still a taker. He still is someone who will take advantage of any situation he's put in. You may know some people like this. And unfortunately, this was the one that I met. So that colored my view of the rest. And I know that sounds, that's pretty judgmental, but I'm sorry. It just kind of did. And because we didn't see them very much, and so his granddaughter started coming to stay with us, and I would be kind to her because that's what I believe in doing, and I love kids. But that was it. I was kind to her because she was my husband's granddaughter. This summer, and now she's been coming a few summers, and now the grandson has come and his family, and I'm getting to see, they live in Arkansas, and I'm getting to see that they're not like their brother, their uncle. They are beautiful young people who are trying to get along in this society. And I was telling him the other day about his granddaughter, that I've just decided that I'm ready. I'm ready to be a grandmother. I'm ready to be a part of their life. And, you know, that's a big difference in just being kind and taking a big responsibility in someone's life. And her name's Paige, and one of the things about Paige is none of his kids look like him, none of his grandkids look like him, but Paige looks like John. Paige looks like his mother. And so whenever I see them together, it is just the sweetest thing. But this summer, it's like, this is God. He opens up our hearts if we're willing. Because I've always had the walls up, and that's the deal. You know, we come here with the wall up, and we do the steps, and brick by brick by brick, they're pulled down. And it happens. And we first get here and are afraid of everything. And then we get here, and we're here for a while, and we're expected to behave a certain way. Hopefully with love and with kindness. And that's the way I want to be. That's what I want. I want to be the servant. I want to be a part of of the lives that have been brought to us. You know, I want to be that person. I had several people in my life who brought me up. You know, they were the people who showed me some of the things that I hadn't been taught. They were the people who introduced me to situations. John and I have had this wonderful chance to travel and to do a lot of things in life. And now what I want to do is I want to be able to do that with Paige and to do it with these kids. And what a gift. That is a gift. Just being opened and, you know, relationships are funny. Even today, we'll have times that we'll, he can't do anything right and I can't do anything right. And that used to be horrible. It used to just freak me out. Now we just laugh. I'll say, okay, it's your day in the barrel. You know, we're just like shooting fish. Okay, it's your day. You can't do anything right today. And we'll laugh at it at the end of the day. And then I'll go through my period. But you know what? We get over it. And our goal is not just to be a couple, but to serve God and to serve our fellows and to find some joy in that. I love it. I love life today. I am so grateful. You know, I think about how I came here and how the unworthiness was palpable. That guilt and that remorse was palpable. And today, it's totally different. Today, we have a chance to move on with our lives. And with that, I think I'm going to give you John over here and let him talk about what he would do.
Might not be able to read this damn thing. My name is John, and I'm an alcoholic. Relationships. I can tell by the number of people in this room that you all have relationships down pat. Well, you know, Mary Emmett talked, and I think did a very good job about telling what good relationships are about. And maybe they have me here to tell about how to have poor relationships. But you know that I need to tell you a few things about me and where I came from so that we can get this thing about relationships on the right path. I came from a functional family. I know that's unusual today, but I came from a very functional family. Mother and father loved each other, 4 boys in the family. We had a lot of respect for each other. My father made sure of that. And there was a lot of touching, a lot of loving, a lot of hugging. And I can tell you right now that I think that my father, very early on in my life, probably at age 5, realized that this little one needed different care than my other 3 brothers. And the reason I say that is because it was like unconditional love from as far back as I can remember, that my dad accepted me exactly where I was. And I remember very early on I had a lot of problems with my mother because my mother was one of those who she wanted you to do things the way that she wanted them done. And I remember my father gave me the right to go to him and talk to him about anything that was going on. And I remember he said this to me. I said, "Dad, I don't know what it is, but I said, it just seems like everything that takes place between Mom and me, I see it differently than she does. And we get into this conflict all the time." And he starts laughing. And I said, "What's so funny?" He said, "You're just alike." And I thought to myself, because I know that my father adored my mother. And he showed it all the time to all of us boys. And I remember another time I came to him and I said to him, because I knew how he felt about her, so I was always very careful about how I would propose some of my conflict with Mom, with him. And I started telling him about the situation that we were in, and it had to do with clothes. You know, I was a third son. I had two older brothers and one younger brother. And good Christ, I was so tired of wearing hand-me-downs. You know, I had no new clothes. And I was one of those who really liked to have nice clothes. And I know this is really dating myself when I say this, but Bill Roop is probably the only one that can remember this. I had a pair of knickers. They were corduroy. And you know, you'd go down the street and you'd whoop, 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 whoop. And I thought to myself, yeah, this is really getting tiresome. So I went to my father and I said to him about that I was trying to convince my mother that I could go out and get a job and I could earn my own money and I could buy my own clothes. And she said, you can go out and you can get a job and you can make your own money, but you will bring that money home and we will go shopping together. And I thought, that's not what I had in mind. So I went to my father, and I was very upset, and I told him what Mom said. And I could see that he was not really accepting what I had to say very well. He said, well, you certainly must be talking about your mother, but I know you're not talking about my wife. You know, see, I had all the good examples about relationships. My father and my mother taught me about good relationships. I watched it take place. It wasn't just words, it was action about how they cared for each other. But you know what? I didn't learn it. I ignored it. I had very few friends in my life. I had a lot of acquaintances. And the reason for that is because I did not allow people to get too close. Because if I allowed you to get too close, it hurt. So I learned very early, you don't do that. And I remember being raised in the church, and they had this saying, the nuns would say, you know, if you think it in your mind, it's the same as doing it. And I thought, good God, I'm doomed. You know, because it's all I thought about, you know. Because, you know, I realized this, guys. You know, a lot of you, and I was one of them, a lot of you really like girls. But it's like developing the idea that girls are really nice to be around for a while. But if you really want to have fun, you want to be with the guys. How twisted is that? But you know what? That's what I brought into adulthood with me. You know, I thought if I could just be sweet and kind and loving and, you know, romantic and all that, I could get close and, you know. I worked my ass off to buy a car because I was 16 years old with one of the only convertibles in my high school. And I did that for one reason and one reason only. And I wasn't very successful at that. But, you know, I always had an underlying motive. And this is the kind of way that I operate. And this is one of the things that I learned early on about myself. I was raised in a coal mining town in northeastern Pennsylvania. And you know what I said? I thought, money was power. And that's the way I saw it, because that was the example that I saw in my town. I saw a lot of people who were, you know, worked and worked and worked and you know, they got exhausted, but they never had very much. And then I saw a very small group of people that seemed to not work very hard and they made a lot of money, and I thought, that's very attractive to me, and I'm going that way. And that became ingrained in my head, that idea about power, money is power. And one of the things that happened is that, you know, along the way, I had my first drink of booze. And all of a sudden, my life changed. Because in school, things came very easy to me, especially mathematics. So therefore, in elementary school, I was probably in the upper 5% of my class. And I want you to know, folks, I had my first drink, and it was like falling off the end of a table. Because I pursued it with everything that I had. If you had to describe me early in my teens in high school, you could take gasoline and girls and just mix them up in a pail. And that was an example of what I was. Get the car to get the girls, get the booze to get the girls. That's the way I looked at it. And I want to tell you that I was in trouble in high school. So therefore, what happened to this alcoholic, and I don't know if it's the same for the rest of you, but I presume that it may be from what I do in working with other people. I never matured. Emotionally, I never grew up. Alcohol got in the way. So therefore, with these childlike concepts, this is what I took into adulthood. People said to me, "How come you did so well in the Marine Corps?" And I did. It's because I liked violence. I liked it. I did. Sometimes I took a terrible beating at violence, but I liked it. And I also knew how to inflict it, too. So, I missed a lot. I did. I missed a lot. And I'm going to give you an example of how far I missed the boat. I was coming back from overseas on this ship that we were on for 33 days, and I got back to the United States. And here's the idea that I had on that ship. Now, I had nothing to drink for 33 days. But that doesn't keep the alcoholic mind from operating. I thought I was going to come back to the United States. I only had a short time to do in the Marine Corps. And what I was going to do is I was going to find somebody who was going to get married and have my great success and make a lot of money. That's the thought that I had in mind. That's crazy. You know, I was no more ready for that than the man on the moon, but that's what I thought. That came out of here. Defective piece of equipment. So I got out of the Marine Corps. I got married right out of the Marine Corps. Married a gal I should never have been married to, but that doesn't, you know, that's the way it is. We had two children right away. My sponsor said to me, "I can understand one child. But two?" I said I was busy. And I was well into my alcoholism. I still had all of this misconception of what it was to be a man and how to have relationships. Remember I told you before, I had a lot of acquaintances. I didn't have friends. If you have friends, folks, it takes energy to have friends. One of my dear friends in the program told me very early on, and I swear to you, his name was John Keefe, and he said, "You know, in order to have a friend, you have to be one." Ooh, that's a new concept. Selfish, self-centered, shallow. That's exactly what I was. And that's what the people in Alcoholics Anonymous had to work with when I first came here. And I was in terrible shape, folks. I was in terrible, terrible shape. But you know what? I didn't know any better. I didn't know any different. Because I was like a little scared little kid getting sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And boy, is that hard for me to tell you. Here's this hard-charging Marine telling you that I was a scared kid getting sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't know how to say those words. So therefore, the relationships that I had were really twisted. It was just what I wanted. That's all I wanted. I wanted what I wanted when I wanted it. And it didn't matter to me what you thought. That's the way I saw my work. That's the way I saw other people. That's the way I saw life. And that's what I took into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want you to understand, folks, I got sober in this program at 24 by the grace of God. And I did not even recognize where it came from. I didn't. I was here almost a year before I realized that something changed in my life and I didn't do it. But you know, a lot of the rest of the stuff, a lot of the rest of the sickness, this is the way I like to describe myself at 24. You know, if you get sober at 24, physically, you respond quickly. You know, that 24-year-old body responds, and you look well. And people would pat me on the back, and they would say, you know, you look wonderful. And I would say to myself in my mind, I'm sure glad they can't see what's going on the inside. Because that was a very sick guy in there. And I took this into the marriage I had destroyed. You know, there are some things that happen in life as far as relationships are concerned. That there's a couple things I'm going to tell you now that I don't really like to tell you. Number one, I'd done so much damage in that first marriage that there was no putting it back together. No way possible. And the other one thing I want to tell you is I was a very poor father. And I was a very poor husband. I was a violent, vicious, scary kind of guy for women and for families and for kids. You never knew what you had on your hands when I walked through that door. And I'm not happy and I'm not proud about that fact, but that is a fact. And that's what I took into early recovery. I was 7 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was working my ass off. I had been rehired by the newspaper that I was fired from. I had gone back to college, to school. I was selling real estate on Sundays. And I was going to a lot of AA meetings. Does that tell you anything? I mean, I was a very busy guy. Sam, I was as busy as you, maybe more so. But you know what I was doing? I was just running. I was just running. Because you know what the idea I came to? I went right back to that little kid who looked at the people in my hometown that had money and that represented power, and I said, that's where I'm going. I got through the first 5 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous and I went into a giant coast. And the giant coast was, I was going to make money. That's what I was going to do. Because I thought, that's what it's all about. And I set on that path to make money. And when I ran in, I was single. When I ran into women in my life, you know what I did? I used that money. You need an apartment, we'll get your apartment. You need a car, we'll get your car. As long as you do what I say that you're going to do, that's how I controlled it. And that's the kind of stuff that I took into sobriety. And you know that big pile of money that I wanted to make? I got that big pile of money. And I remember the words from Clancy and they rang in my head. I had all the money that I could possibly use. I had this big place, big home in Wisconsin. And I stood out in the driveway and it was like there was a big hole in my stomach and the wind was blowing through. I was just as miserable as I was before. I thought this money was going to make all the difference. And it didn't. I was a very sick guy. And I went into another marriage. There's a few people probably sitting in this room who knew this lady. And you know what I did? I forced the family to move from Southern California to Wisconsin. I forced it. I manipulated it. I maneuvered it. And she was a very sick lady. And I knew that. And I married her anyhow. So the thing I want to tell you is that all of those things that took place early in my life, right up till the divorce, that took place in this town, were of my own doing. They were all part of my own manipulation. And I decided that something had to change. Because I have a younger brother who is a psychologist who just retired from University of South Carolina in Columbia. And I remember calling him about this and telling him about what terrible luck I had with the women in my life. And this is what he said to me. He said to me, "Who did the choosing?" God. I had to take responsibility for all the sick people that I had in my life. It had nothing to do with them. It had to do with me. And I don't talk a lot in our program about this. But he said to me, "You can get some help in this area." And I went outside the program to get some help. And I am forever grateful. Because you know what happened? I learned in that 2-year period working with that therapist, I learned about intimacy. Folks, I didn't know anything about it. I knew about sexuality, I knew about sensuality, but I did not know anything about intimacy. You see, I was incapable of being intimate. Because if I'm going to be intimate, that means that I have to be vulnerable. I have to open up. And us guys know what it's like to open up to this thing called intimacy. People in my life, some women in my life, used to say to me, "We could get so close and we couldn't get any closer." Hell yes. I had that door locked. I couldn't let you in there. I couldn't let you see. I couldn't let you see the real John in there. And this is the beauty about this. Not only did it have to do with my relationships with women, but it had my relationships to do with all of you. You see, I had a face for business. I had a face for AA. I had a face for my tennis game. I had different faces for different places with different people. Came time in my life when this realization started to take place. I had the opportunity, by the grace of God, to bring that all together to one person. Same person here that was in business, in my tennis court, in my town, in my society. And it was an enlightening time in my life. I'll tell you why I'm so grateful for this. I'm grateful that I'm an alcoholic, and I'm just going to kind of pull this together if I may. Every one of the pains and sorrows that I've had in my life before AA and since have been well worth it to arrive at this place in my life. Every drink, every problem, every sorrow, it's all been worth it. Because I became a better human being. And you know what happened? When this enlightenment time took place, into my life comes Mary Emma. And I was able to see the real value in this lady. And I could find a female person that I could adore, that I could commit my life to, and you didn't have to worry about him. He was going to be her guy, and that was it. There was no, "We'll try it on and see if it works." No. That's my commitment until they put me in the ground. We have a wonderful life together today. You know, she mentioned before about my son. And it's true. It's a hard area for me. Some of you sitting out there know that. I've talked to you about it. But you want me to tell you how I look at that today? I have a chance in Alcoholics Anonymous to work with a lot of young people, a lot of young men. And my way of looking at it is that God places those people in my life so that I can share with them, openly share with them, the missing part of my own son. They fill that area in my life. That's why I'm so grateful for everything that has happened to me in my life since I came here. Because I can have a relationship with a young man, and I can have a relationship with my wife, and I can have a relationship with the people that I sponsor. And it's open, and it's honest, and I'm there for you. What about that selfish, self-centered, maneuverable guy that came here that was going to manipulate everybody? What happened to him? God can perform miracles in this program. And I'm just grateful today that the people in Alcoholics Anonymous were patient enough with me that could allow me to live long enough, stay sober long enough to be a responsible man that could have relationships with other people, and you could count on it. That's a great gift. Thank you very kindly.